Welcome to episode 3 of the iJacopo podcast, featuring Dr. Jack Holliday. The International Joint Commission on Allied Health Personnel and Ophthalmology is a not-for-profit organization that offers certification and education to allied ophthalmic personnel around the globe. iJacopo's mission is to promote global eye health and prevent blindness through training program accreditation, education, and the certification of allied ophthalmic personnel. Dr. Jack Holliday is a clinical professor of ophthalmology at the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. Prior to retiring from clinical practice, Dr. Holliday specialized in refractive surgery. Throughout his career, he received multiple awards, wrote hundreds of publications, and developed inventions and software programs.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today. What I'm going to do today is talk to you about something that I've always enjoyed, and that's intraocular lenses, but I'm going to talk to you about the future. Short-term and some long-term things that are going to happen over the next 5 to probably 7 years, these lenses that we're going to see today will be available. And they'll overcome the problem that you're dealing with today with multifocal or diffractive optics. And that is when you have two images on the retina, even though the brain's pretty good about getting rid of a lot of the noise, the fact is the contrast of the second image, that is, if you're looking at distance, and there's a near image on top of it, well, that near image causes headlights to have a halo, it reduces the contrast, and the number one and two complaints that patients have today are halos and glare. And it's from the fact that double imagery, which is the only way we do that. But lenses we're going to talk about today are going to get rid of that problem. So what we're going to do today is talking about eliminating aberrations, coma, trefoil, and IOLs of the future. Would get rid of presbyopia problem. We'll talk about that. Positive and negative dysphotopsias. We'll talk about that. And eliminated other things like wavelengths that we don't want. So all of these things are what the IOLs of the future are going to do. Now, the first ones we're going to talk about are these refractive surprises and aberrations and adjustable IOLs and femtosecond adjustable IOLs. Now, these two UV adjustable are already here. There's 5 sites in the United States in which commercially available instruments that adjust the light adjustable IOL, and they gave those to the people that were investigators because they already knew how to use the instrument. But this year, they are already beginning to sell those to other people, and the light adjustable lens we'll talk about in a second will allow you to adjust the refractive error down to the patient, down to about a tenth of a diopter of spherical equivalent, and about a tenth of a diopter of astigmatism, and correct a little asphericity, which is spherical aberration. But those patients will drop from 20/20 that we get today to 20/25 is what you get with a half a diopter of astigmatism and half a diopter of spherical equivalent error. Those patients will drop down to 20/16, 20/12. Now, what do you think the record visual acuity is? What's the best visual acuity that's ever been recorded? 20/8.9. Okay, now that's almost 20/9, and 20/10 comes on a standard eye chart, and 20/9 is 1 or 2 letters better than that. And that's about theoretically what we calculate. And actually, the reason we use 20/20 today as normal, not perfect, but normal, is because Snellen made a mistake. He made a mistake. Before that, they used black and white stripes. They'd put it on the wall, and they'd back up a patient until it looked gray. Okay, they call that line pair. And they found that the best people could see those when those black and white together got down to 1 minute of arc. Okay, now 1 minute is 1/60th of a degree. Okay? 1 minute of arc. And that's what our 20/20 line is. But that was a black and white line. Letters, we made them so that the black part was 1 minute of arc and the light part was 1 minute of arc. So it was 2 minutes of arc. And that's why 20/20 became normal with letters instead of 20/10, which is what they did the years before that. So we got, and actually Himmels and a lot of those old guys said, we're going to miss a lot of patients that would have had what we call normal vision 20/20 because they should be 20/10. So 20/10 vision is really what you'd call perfect vision. Los Angeles Dodgers, they did a study, took baseball players, took the minor leaguers and the major leaguers, okay? 5 of the 200 patients had 20 over 8.9 vision. 16% had 20 over 10 vision, and 50% had 20/12 vision. And it was directly correlated with their batting average. Because you got to have good vision to see that fastball. All right, getting off the track here. So the point that I'm making is a study by Steve Schallhorn that had 20,000 patients showed the quality of vision, visual acuity, is the number one parameter in terms of patient satisfaction. With these lenses, you'll be able to adjust those patients down to their potential, which will be 20/10 over 20/12, 20/16, as opposed to that 20/20. All right? And what's happening is we also have lenses. Here's what the unit looks like that's delivering that. It'll be able to correct all that. 5 commercial sites, it'll all be there. Now, the other thing, we'll have femtosecond lasers that we're working on today that won't require you to have put in a light adjustable lens. It will actually be able to take acrylic lenses and change the index of refraction and correct the refractive error on lenses that have been put in on the last 10 or 15 years. So that's around the corner, and that's just now beginning to happen. Multifocal lenses, you end up with that near image out of focus on the retina when you're looking at distance and vice versa, and that's the problem. Now, diffractive optics with extended depth of field, one of the ways to do that is to push the near focal point, one that used to be 2.5. Remember, we started out at 4, and then we came down to 3, and then we came down to 2.25, and the Symphony's 175. And now that dip is gone because the near and the far are so close together, there's no dip anymore. It's a 175 bifocal lens. And that's what they've done for that in terms of extended depth of focus, okay? Is basically created that. But you can do it with refractive optics, you can do it in other ways, but basically extended depth of focus is still a sacrifice. If you extend that focus to where it's longer, you reduce the fact that that focal point in the center is not as good as it used to be when it was one point. So there's always a compromise, even with extended depth of focus lenses. Now, the trifocal lens that's just come out will be an improvement over the bifocal because you'll get distance, intermediate, and near. You'll have the same size halo as you have with a bifocal, but you get all three distances and there's no loss of contrast or visual acuity. So the trifocal lens is going to replace the bifocals, no question, as a step toward what we're talking about today with accommodating lenses. Okay, now these are some of the lenses that are on the market. Dynamic optic. Here's what the base looks like. And what it's got is a hard material with a little plunger in which that front surface changes shape. Okay, so now what happens is that lens is going to have a base that goes into the bag. And then what happens is as the ciliary body contracts and relaxes, then that base is going to move and change that little piston. And then what you see on the right is that little piston that has fluid in there. When that ciliary body contracts, it moves fluid and it'll change the shape. So you see that little bubble or shape there, that's a curvature change. This is one mechanism. These we call mechanical changes that are trying to harness the energy that's in the ciliary body. The ciliary body does not lose strength as we get older. It stays about the same. When we take the cortex and stuff out of the capsular bag, the capsular bag turns from that nice, relaxed, rubbery kind of elastic to something more like aluminum foil. In other words, the reason the bag stays compliant and elastic is because it's got lens fibers right in the next of it that are bathing it in fluid that keep it like that. Once that goes away, then the capsule gets fairly rigid. So things that are going to depend upon capsule elasticity aren't going to work very well because the bag loses its elasticity once you take the cortex out. Okay, so another lens, the new lens, basically takes and fills that chamber. As you'll see, they put the fluid in. Now, this little new lens, as it goes in there, you'll see goes back in the capsule and has the same thing, a little plunger deal on the top. It goes in like that. And you see how these work. What they do is they harness the energy of the ciliary body to cause fluid to change shape inside the eye. Now, the thing that happens is this one is kind of depending a little bit on the capsular bag. And so that one over time, I'm not sure that that one's going to work. But these are what we have today. Now, flex optics, those things are just real thin lenses that can be put inside the bag. And if it's thin enough and the bag were compliant, then at the beginning, it'll work. But over time, as the capsule fibrosis and it begins to turn inelastic, that'll go away. But these are some of the things. This is the flex optics that are on there. Now, injectable polymers. Now, this is always kind of cool. When you inject a polymer inside the eye, okay, goes in there. Now, here's the one that's kind of cool. Now, this is amazing to me. Okay, there's the lens. That's about a 6 millimeter or as it shows you the diameter of that. Now look what happens. That's the thickness and the diameter. Now look at this. Changes from that little bitty tube into a lens. And those materials have memory. So you can get that in through a 1 millimeter incision and it goes in through this little tube and then it opens up and into a lens. So that's called the smart IOL. And those really, the only advantage is getting it through a 1 millimeter incision. And the question is that important? But anyway, this is what's on the horizon. Now the smart IOL, as we see here, okay, you see again the mechanical change inside. Okay, now watch this one. All right. Now these used to work like the old cameras used to work. Now look what happens. When the guy looks down, which is what we normally do when we look at something close, well, the fluid level changes and it focuses it close rather than it near. Now, the only problem is if you're a carpenter working on something on the ceiling, that isn't gonna work. Okay, but that, again, these are ideas that people have had for the future and what's on the horizon. Okay, now the Alenza, I work with these guys. Now, the Alenza basically is a lens that has, and I'll show you it here, those two things on the outside are a battery, and on the inside of it, it's got a piece of glass, and if you pass electricity through a piece of glass, you can change the index of refraction, and you can make that lens go from plano to +3. So you get 3 diopters of focus and all you have to do. Now, what we did is design a circuit that goes in that piece of glass and that circuit looks like a little plus. And that circuit basically says when your pupil contracts, you're usually looking up close. And it senses that change in the pupil size. So when the pupil gets smaller, it kicks in the +3. And when the pupil gets bigger, it does. But there's one other thing that causes the pupil to get small. Walking outside. That also makes a pupil. So you've teach that little sensor in the center that if the person goes out and the brightness of that center little photo sensor gets brighter, you don't turn in the plus three. You only turn on the plus three if basically the light level doesn't change. And if the light level remains the same on that photo sensor, then when the pupil gets smaller, you know it's not from light, you know it's from accommodation, so that circuitry detects whether it's from bright light, from focusing up close, so that works. And that one now is under Alcon and it's under development, and that one's gonna work. Now the only thing is those batteries are rechargeable batteries. Okay, so at night when you go to bed, you put on a little mask, like that sleeping mask. And that sleeping mask, just like the toothbrush charger, charges up the batteries and it lasts for about 3 or 4 days, okay? So you gotta sleep with a mask at night. Now, one of the things that people were doing when they're trying to decide whether they're gonna buy something like this, how many of you, if you were at cataract age and would get this lens, would be willing to wear a mask 1 or 2 nights a week to charge the battery? Okay, well, that's why they didn't buy it. Because the other 90% of you say, I don't care how that works. Well, anyway, so you've got to figure out a way to keep the electricity going on that thing, and that's the problem. Okay, now, and that's what the lens looks like. It looks just exactly like the monofocal or diffractive multifocal lenses we put in today. All right, another way that people are working with increasing the depth of field that doesn't have halos is the pinhole. AccuFocus has what they call the IC8, and that has a little aperture in it. And basically, if you look at that, that red curve is a monofocal lens, okay? Those aqua dots, the blue ones, are these right here. That's the IC8 AccuFocus. And what you see here is that you get a little better near vision with something that's a multifocal lens that's supposed to be here at 20/20, but that gives you pretty good depth of field. It's actually about the same or a little better than the Symphony. So it does give you that. Now the other thing that that AccuFocus lens is going to be able to do is post-refractive surgery patients that have halos and glare that are not seeing well, that pinhole effect eliminates the higher order aberrations, cylinder, sphere, and everything. And you can take somebody that's 2100 and bring them down to 20/25 or 20/20, just like you can. As a matter of fact, you can tell ahead of time. Because you can take a half, a one, a 1.5, and 2 millimeter pinhole, put it up in front of them, and if they come down to 20/20, you know that that's gonna be a good option for them. And if they don't, well, then something else is going on. But anyway, this lens is under investigation right now and is in the study to determine whether, it's in the study. There's no question it'll be approved because it's in a regular lens. And in sometime early next year, probably about second quarter, they will have approval for this lens. And one of the early indications is going to take all those people that have had refractive surgery who are unhappy with their vision. When they get a cataract, you put this in, it not only gives them the intermediate vision, but it corrects all those aberrations and stuff. So this ought to be a pretty good deal for them. That's what it looks like in the eye. And it's like the camera inlay that went in the cornea, but the problems with things in the cornea is that the cornea doesn't like things in there. So over time, sometimes you get a flattening of the cornea, you get scarring, but with the aperture in the eye. And the nice thing is about it, you can still see around it to do a retina exam so that you can see if there's any pathology and stuff. So that still works pretty good. All right, positive and negative dysphotopsia. Well, positive dysphotopsias and our negative dysphotopsia, we wrote an article a couple years ago that explains it. Negative dysphotopsia is basically seeing those dark lines or arcuate thing in the periphery. And what we showed was it's a result of light missing the lens, getting into the eye, and having a back illumination area, and then light going through the lens, going as far forward as it can. And if those two don't overlap, you see a black line or an arcuate. In other words, the posterior edge of light missing the lens and the anterior edge of the most peripheral ray that can get through the lens don't overlap. And that happens in about 16% of the population. And that's what it is. Well, Urie has made a design where he makes a little curve on the back edge of the lens. Instead of being biconvex, it's got a little concavity there. And that concavity ends up causing a light scatter. All right, here's the gap that I was talking about. And that light scatter fills in that little area. Now, like everything, a change makes other consequences. So the question is it going to have some other effect? Will it increase the positive reflection and so forth? Tazignan also had a lens that she put in the bag, but you got to do an anterior and posterior capsulotomy. That's been out 4 or 5 years and never has gone anywhere. So the other thing that can be there is they have these meibomian and things that are colorless lenses that are like photogray glasses. They can actually change, just like the index in refraction and silver chloride used in photogray glasses, where they go dark when you go outside. Well, you can do that with color too. And so you can filter out certain wavelengths so that people in bright light can end up with a yellow color that's not there at night. So what happens, it works like photogray glasses. Basically, the lens turns dark, and on the right, what you see, that right lens, that's what the lens is in dim light or dark light, and then the line turns yellow when you go out in bright light. So it works like a pair of Serengeti sunglasses. It filters out the ultraviolet and some of the blue light when you're in real bright light to make sure that it doesn't do anything to damage the retina. So those things are on the horizon too. So what we did today is try to show you what the future holds. And what I will tell you is certainly within your lifetime, in the next 5 to 7 years, we'll have accommodating lenses which don't have halos and glare. They will perform at about a 3 or 4 diopter level, which means you can see something at 33 centimeters by just focusing up and looking at distance. And those lenses are on your horizon. And what I tried to do, show you today is where technology is along that path that we'll finally get there. Thank you so much for your attention. It's good to be here.
You've been listening to episode 3 of the iJacopo podcast. For more information, go to our website, www.ijcahpo.org.